Okay, so hello everybody. So we are still in following in the Buddha's footsteps. We're going to do that until we get to awakening. Yeah, and we're in the chapter about practicing serenity in Chinese Buddhism. So we started it last week, yeah, and I gotta tell you, this is not my expertise. Yeah, I don't actually have an expertise about anything much, but we will go through it as best as we can. I think it's quite interesting to see how the different traditions approach developing serenity and insight, yeah, because it's all aimed at the same thing, but the methods are designed according to different people's dispositions, yeah. And so, again, illustrating the Buddha's skill in teaching. And actually, a lot of this will probably comes from the commentaries, you know, the Indian or Chinese or Tibetans who learned from the Tibetan scriptures and then wrote commentaries on them. Yeah. Okay, so we got as far. We talked about, I will do the prayers. Calm down. Maybe. Okay, so we did talk a little bit about the body, breath, and mind. And so I'll try and review that a little bit, yeah, and then we'll continue on. Okay. So let's start with remembering the visualization and prepare our mind to take refuge and generate bodhicitta. Let's create our motivation. When we do the visualization and the chanting, often, which we do every day, probably several times in our meditation practice and during teachings, then we really develop a habit of feeling like the Buddha is in front of us, a habit of feeling like we are sitting in the presence of the Buddha, who looks at us with complete acceptance and compassion. And as we develop this habit of thinking of the Buddha in a totally different way than we did before, then it becomes easier to arise in the mind, such that, you know, we just for a moment think of the Buddha or visualize the Buddha for a moment. And since we always think of the Buddha as being calm and kind, you know, then just thinking of the Buddha like that, I think, helps us to tap into our own kindness, our own compassion. And then whenever we see a Buddha statue again, that feeling comes up, that awareness comes up. So it might seem as something small, but as we establish new habits in our life, these things that seem small actually build up and have a big effect on us. So thinking of the Buddha right now, let's recall his bodhicitta and his dedication to benefiting each and every sentient being. And let's cultivate that ourselves and want to attain Buddhahood for that reason. Okay, so this, he was talking about the body, breath, and mind are interrelated and therefore discussed together. So I'm on page 292, just so we can review some of this. Okay, the body is the coarsest, the breath is a little less coarse, and the mind is the least coarse. Adjusting and balancing the body makes the breath subtler, which in turn makes the mind subtle. Such a subtle, fine mind is conducive for cultivating serenity. The influence goes the other way as well. When the mind is subtle, the breathing pattern changes and becomes more refined, and in turn, the body is more relaxed. So be aware of this in your own experience, because the more you become aware of it, the more, you know, when your mind is not so calm, you can work with your breath. For example, just deliberately slowing down your breath a little bit, you know, and watch how that affects your mental state. Yeah. And watch, you know, sometimes people have a hard time noticing when they're starting to get angry. Sometimes noticing our breathing pattern can be a good indicator that, oh, our mood is starting to change. We're starting to get angry. Because, you know, our breath gets quicker, it gets coarser. Yeah. And that can be a sign to us, yeah, so that we notice, oh, my anger is just beginning. And then when it's beginning, we can, it's much easier to apply an antidote and be successful with lowering the anger. Okay. Having mindfulness and introspective awareness of our body, breath, and mind during the break times between meditation sessions and in our daily life is crucial. If our physical actions are rough, impulsive, and reckless, our breath will be coarse, and because of this, our thoughts will be scattered and unclear. Yeah. You can see this if you watch. Yeah. When we later sit down to meditate, our body will be agitated and uncomfortable, making the mind correspondingly restless and unsettled. During the break time, we should therefore reflect on what is important to do and how to do it, and then go about it in a relaxed yet focused manner. So this is good advice to prevent lung. Okay? Because, you know, when we push and when we want to do everything at once and we're impatient, yeah, then, you know, the mind is like that. The breath changes, yeah, and the flow of the qi, the lung in the body changes, and you can get some physical symptoms from that. Yeah. So lung prevention is much better than lung remedy. But that goes for everything that can go wrong with the body. Yeah, preventing is the optimum. So begin a meditation session by settling the body into a comfortable and stable posture. If possible, sit in the Vajra position with the left foot on the right thigh and the right foot on the left thigh. Some people call that the lotus position. That is the wrong terminology. It's called the Vajra position. Okay. Loosen your belt and put your left hand on top of the right. That's Chinese Buddhism. Tibetan, we have the right on top of the left. Yeah. I've always wondered if you notice the statues, like often the stone statue in the garden, it's Chinese style and the left hand is over the right. Yeah. So they must have some way of it figuring in with the qi. Okay. Now balance the breath by expelling the stale breath. Gently exhale it through the mouth while imagining that any blockages in the flow of the body's internal energy are released. Notice it says gently. So it isn't. Okay. We had somebody come once for winter retreat who loved to deep breathe. Yeah. Okay. But again, just by trying to gently exhale, you're already slowing the mind down, influencing the breath. Yeah, then close the mouth and gently inhale fresh air through the nose. So gently. Yeah, not. Yeah. Okay, then sit with the mouth closed and breathe through the nose. Unless you're very congested, then breathe any way you can. Just keep breathing. Okay. Sitting very still while meditating is important. Begin meditation by adjusting the breath and helping it to become subtle if it is windy, uneven, or ordinary. Okay, so windy breathing is when inhaling and exhaling produces a sound, like I was just doing, or even a softer sound. But yeah, it's windy, yeah. Like the wind, yeah. Have you also noticed, usually school teachers notice this, that when it's very windy, the kids are bouncing off the walls. Yeah, the wind, just the wind in the environment, yeah, influences the mind. Yeah. So rainy days, okay, keeping the kids inside, they don't like that. But windy days, yeah, like boing, boing, boing. Yeah, right, school teachers? Yeah. Okay. So it makes when you breathe like that, it makes the mind scattered and unfocused. And, of course, the body becomes scattered and unfocused. Uneven breathing may occur when the breathing is noiseless. Here, the breath catches and does not flow smoothly. As a result, the mind becomes stuck and blocked. Yeah, the breath not flowing smoothly, the mind doesn't flow smoothly. Okay. And then the third one, ordinary breathing, occurs when the breath is still coarse, even though there is no sound and it does not catch. Breathing this way makes the mind tired. So somebody's question was, they said, I identified my windy breathing and my uneven breathing, but what is ordinary breathing? Okay, now he didn't give a definition here, but by the term ordinary, I would assume it's just the way we go about our day when nothing in particular is happening. Okay. So the breath is may or may not be gentle. Yeah. It's just ordinary how we breathe. And so, yeah, because it's not a subtle kind of breath. It's not a gentle breath. It's not a soft breath. Yeah, ordinary breathing, just, how you breathe. That's what I assume it means. Okay. So to subdue these three imbalanced ways of breathing. Now, you're going to go, but my ordinary way, what is imbalanced about that? Well, maybe look how easily the smallest thing can instigate some response in the mind. Yeah, it's very interesting, because the mind is always looking at objects, external objects, and it seems as if there's nothing special happening. Yeah, but at lunch, or any time, just especially when there's people around, then watch how the mind goes to this or that or the other thing. Yeah. How loud are they chanting? Yeah. Oh, it's too loud. Yeah. So you hear the sound, and then immediately there's a feeling of something unpleasant, and immediately there's judgment, and, why are they chanting, like they're trying to hear it in Mars? That's a small kind of anger. What are they doing? Yeah. Or you look around. Yeah. I have this happen a lot because I think that at lunch, they often, after I go through the line because I'm the first one, then people remember things and they put more things out. Because although I do not deliberately look in other people's bowls, I can't see in their bowls, but they have the top of the bowl. And then I'll see something in it, and the mind goes, oh, that looks good. But I didn't see it. Did they put it out after I went through the line? Yeah. Why are they doing that? How do I go get some without looking obvious? Yeah? Just notice what your mind does. Yeah? And the instant judgments and then figuring out, how I can get something or, the blind, yeah? It's, today when the sun is very bright and shining and the light hits the table and then goes in your eyes, it's quite uncomfortable. So, you sit down and you're ready to chant and the light's in your eyes and you're going, why doesn't somebody lower the shade? Yeah, can't they see that before they sit down? Yeah, somebody like me should go and lower the shade. But I don't think that I should. It's like somebody should. And then on today, where the sun was not shining, but the blind was not at the bottom, it was lower. It was, why did somebody lower the blind? I left it open. I opened the blind this morning. It was all the way up, and we need more light when it's cloudy. Yeah? So just watch, how the mind is always looking at something outside and having some opinion about it. Yeah. That is based on either a pleasant or an unpleasant feeling, and we have an opinion, and then we either get attached or we get averse, or we just space out. Yeah, quite interesting. Yeah. By the way, the other day I was in here in the late afternoon, and the blinds were up. And the sun was shining in the room. Actually, a lot of the sun comes in at the top. We may have to put a paper you know, some kind of paper to block it a little bit, because it goes right on Tsongkhapa, you know. And then, you know, that's such a beautiful tonka, and the sun's shining directly on it. It's going to ruin the fabric and the color, and, you know, it's up there, and I can't reach it, and, yeah. Do your mind go off on things like this?
Thank goodness we put some UV glass on that.
Yeah.
That helps.
It has UV glass. Okay. Well, that helps. But the sun's pretty bright. Okay. So I'm just trying to give some examples of the ordinary mind and what it does, what it picks up, what it makes comments on. Yeah. Okay. To subdue these three imbalanced ways of breathing, adjust the breath by focusing the mind at the navel. This has a stabilizing effect. So putting your attention down here is, if you're getting lungy, and, you know, having some pain here. I mean, before you have pain here, don't meditate at the heart. But should you get it, move the whole visualization down to the navel. Okay? The navel is much, much, much more solid place in the body. And if you put your concentration there, it lowers the kind of the lung, you know. Okay. Check that the body is relaxed and tension-free. Yeah, I'm completely relaxed. You should have seen what happened. I came in before this session. That's why we keep silence. Yeah? But it's interesting, you know? What happens before the session is going to influence what's going on as you sit down. Yeah. Oh, the lunch break was too short today. Yeah, I didn't have enough time to, you know, relax or take a nap or, you know. Anyway, I never have enough time. You know, this schedule in this place is, you know, it's too much. And off we go. Yeah, and then when we're chanting the opening prayers, what's going on in our mind? Yeah, what we just did before we came here and what we're thinking about and, yeah, how we wish something would be different. We always want something to be different than the way it is. Yeah, even if it's something good, we want it to be different, because it should be more good. Yeah, it should be more pleasant. Yeah. Okay. Also, imagine the breath penetrating all the pores freely and without obstruction. Yeah, that's going to relax your body. If you can imagine that as you inhale and exhale, some breath is, you know, flowing through your skin as well. Okay. The breathing, in this way, the breath becomes subtler and more refined. The breathing process is slower, smoother, and more relaxed. Breathing in this way automatically makes the mind more stable, peaceful, and content. When the breath and mind are subtler and refined, it is easier to enter meditative absorption. In addition, disorders such as stress and imbalances of the winds and qi do not occur. Yeah, so this can have a very helpful effect on our meditation and how we feel during the day. Yeah, as we go through our life and maybe our ordinary breath, yeah, it starts to become gentler. Having balanced the breath when entering meditation, now balance the mind by first reining in distracted thoughts. Whoa, that's going to take most of the meditation session. Okay, you rein in one distracting thought and another one pops up immediately. Yeah. Then look out for and make adjustments should lethargy, restlessness, agitation, or laxity occur. Lethargy occurs when the mind is muddled and unclear. Okay, the mind's quite dull. You're going to go into kind of, you know, that state that you go into when you're falling asleep. Yeah, you're not asleep, but the mind's changing. Yeah, and there's some weird thing you're thinking about. Yeah. Yeah, if you ever notice those thoughts right as you're falling asleep, like, what? Okay, so your mind is getting there, yeah. And if you don't catch it, yeah, then, you know. So at this time, firmly place the attention at the tip of the nose, okay? Why the tip of the nose? Okay, your navel is lower. It's a stable, solid place. Tip of the nose higher in your body. Your senses, you know, it's near where your senses are. And so that should wake you up. Yeah. And your point, you're also focusing at the tip of the nose. Okay, you can imagine a little dot at the tip of your nose, a little bright dot at the tip of your nose. Yeah. And then think of the Buddha inside that dot. Imagine the Buddha there. And don't sneeze. Yeah. Okay, focusing on this one object without letting the mind sink into dullness is a remedy for lethargy. Restlessness, he's going on to the next one. Yeah, restlessness occurs when the body and mind are fidgety, ill at ease, and unsettled. Like me and my chugu. Yeah, getting it, you know, when you have to sit down and, you know, it's like, yeah, the heating pad is turning the wrong thing and it's lumpy there and your chugu's falling down. And, you know, it takes you half an hour to kind of get ready. Okay. So be aware, I mean, because restlessness, when we sit down, we're physically restless. Yeah. Already you want to stretch your leg, you want to stand up. Yeah. You put your legs in some meditation position, then that's not comfortable enough. So anchoring the attention at the navel helps to stabilize restive energy and stop distractions. Okay, so lethargy, focus here. Yeah, restlessness, focus down at the navel. Okay. Agitation may arise when mindfulness is strong and the mind is more concentrated, yet the mind's focus has moved upward so that the chest area becomes painful. Uh-oh. Yeah, this is a signal that you're getting lung. There's different kinds of lung, but the lung that comes here is the worst one, in my opinion. Okay. So should this happen, you know, with the chest area becoming painful, like I said before, if you've been visualizing here, immediately focus down here and keep your attention down at the navel, not just for 5 minutes, but for several meditations sessions, maybe several days. Okay. Okay, so should this happen, the chest area become painful, relax the mind and let the focus go downward towards the navel. This helps the chi to flow down and become more balanced, which eliminates the chest pain. Laxity manifests when we don't maintain a suitable posture in meditation, and a lack of mental lucidity and determination has set in. Yeah, so laxity is the mind is not vivid, the mind isn't bright. It's not that what you're visualizing or thinking about isn't bright. It's it appears not bright because the mind is not bright. Okay, the mind is not vivid. So to remedy this, reestablish the recommended meditation posture and anchor the mind with strong mindfulness on the meditation object. So you go back to your meditation object and you place your mindfulness on it strongly. So mindfulness in the context of developing serenity is the mental factor that focuses on your meditation object. Yeah. So it doesn't mean just watching what's going on in your mind. That's actually what introspective alertness does. It's the one that monitors to make sure an affliction or a distraction is not arising. Having entered meditation as described above, maintain strong mindfulness and ensure the body, breath, and mind remain balanced by being aware of what is happening with each of them. Okay, so you're trying to focus on your meditation object, but you also have to use the introspective awareness to just check in with the body, the breath, and the mind every so often. Regarding the body, occasionally check to make sure that it remains in the proper position and is not slumped over or leaning to one side, and that our hands, mouth, and so forth are in the proper position. Yeah, it's easy to start out in the good meditation position with your back straight, and then slowly. And then it's so comfortable like this, because this is how you look at your computer, which you're doing for so often. And really, I've been noticing, you know, some people, if you know, are starting to really slouch when they're looking at the computer or reading a book. And if you start slouching and getting used to doing that, you know, it's going to affect your spine. And that's not good, especially as you're getting older, which we all are. Yeah, so try to sit up straight and stretch. Yeah, and my PT said, put your hands kind of on the back, your lower back. And then when you stand, just, you know, stretch, bend your back a little bit backwards like that. Yeah, so that it what it does is it opens up the spine also. So if any of your discs are pinching a nerve, it will alleviate that. Yeah. So, yeah. Good to do. I mean, we have a body. We need to learn how to use it. So it becomes an aid in our Dharma practice and not a hindrance. Okay, so regarding the body, occasionally check to make sure that it remains in the proper position and is not slumped over or leaning to one side, and that our hands, our mouth, are so far in the proper position. Okay. Similarly, check that the breath is gentle and smooth. If it has become windy, uneven, or ordinary, or if it is forced and not relaxed, apply the appropriate antidote so that it becomes refined and gentle. Yeah, so just slow your breath down. Breathe. Make sure, again, come back to your abdomen. Make sure that when you inhale, your abdomen is expanding, not that when you inhale, your chest is expanding. Because you can see when you're agitated, we take short breaths from the top of our chest. If you put your hand here, you can, you know, take some short breaths. You know, like when you're afraid, yeah? And then the breath is not going down, it's stuck up here, yeah? So you need to kind of relax it, focus at your navel, yeah? Let the breath settle down there a little bit more. Okay. If the mind has been infected by lethargy, restlessness, agitation, or laxity, apply the antidote so that it becomes balanced. So we went through that quite a bit in before. Read the book and remember. Keeping the body, breath, and mind in balance prevents disorders and obstacles from previous lives from arising and aids in concentration. Yeah. I sometimes wonder, you know, when people's minds start getting really agitated or really withdrawn, or, you know, there's some change in the person from how you usually know them, how much the breath is involved in that. Yeah, because it seems to me the breath, you know, changes. And if you get used to that kind of breathing, then you get used to that kind of mental state too. Okay. So how you emerge from meditation is important. So that was how you enter, now how you emerge. Okay. Since the body, breath, and mind have become subtler in meditation, they need to become coarser and more active before you engage in other activities. So immediately arising from the meditation seat and rushing around without allowing the body, breath, and mind to gradually adjust to the change in activity may bring on headaches or stiffness later. Okay, so those of you who, you know, tend to get headaches or tend to, you know, your body becomes stiff. See if you know, like right at you, you're in a concentrated state or a quiet state in meditation, and then instantly after you dedicate, you get up and you're running, you know, got to get to the main thing because it's only a short break and I have on my schedule that I've got to finish this. So I rush off and then you wonder why you have a headache or, yeah, something like that. So it doesn't take very long, you know, and it's just a pause and you, you know, stretch and look around a little bit. There's some more instruction here, yeah. And I think, too, you know, when we stop the teaching and then start the dedication chanting, we could wait like 1 second. Yeah, because sometimes the last syllable starts and immediately it's due to this merit, you know. Wait 1 second, maybe 2 seconds. I'm not talking about a long pause, but small pauses like that. You know, it's like, oh, we're going to shift into chanting now. Okay. So immediately arising from the meditation seat and rushing around without allowing the body, breath, and mind to gradually adjust to the change in activity may bring on headaches or stiffness later on. Yeah. In addition, in further meditation sessions, you may feel uncomfortable and fidgety. Yeah? Because you got up and you started fidgeting immediately, running around. When coming out of meditation, first allow the mind to focus on an object different from the meditation object. Okay, so you open your eyes, just, you know, look at whatever you see in front of you or, you know, to the side or something. Just focus on that instead of, it's because it's time to change from your meditation object. Then open your mouth, yeah, like you're at the dentist. No, I'm joking. And gently exhale. So just open your mouth a little bit. Imagining the wind dispersing from the energy channels in the body. Then uncross and move the feet a little. Okay, so it's first look, yeah, then exhale, then your feet cross, uncross your feet and move them just a little bit. You're still not standing up. And then follow this by rubbing your hands together to warm them and then rubbing the body briefly. So in Singapore, you see this a lot, and I think in Taiwan too. You know, after the session, you know, you dedicate, and then people are all going like this, yeah, and then like this, and sometimes like this, you know, and it's to energize the body after you've been sitting still. Yeah, I think that's actually quite good advice, yeah. Okay. Once any excessive physical heat is gone, get up and move about. Cultivating skill in how we enter, abide, and arise from meditation plants the seeds to be like the great bodhisattvas described in the Lotus Sutra. So now we're going to hear about them. For the sake of the Buddha path, the bodhisattvas in this great assembly have already diligently practiced effort for an incalculable number of tens of millions of crore. A crore is 100,000. Tens of millions of crore of eons. Okay. They have become skillful in entering, abiding in, and emerging from an incalculable number of trillions of crores of samadhis. They have gained great super knowledges, have long cultivated the pure holy conduct, and have become well able to practice all of the good dharmas in appropriate sequence. So that's the bodhisattvas in the great assembly at the Lotus, to hear the Lotus Sutra. Wow. Okay, then there's a reflection. Settle the body into a comfortable and stable position. Then two, balance the breath by expelling the stale breath. And third, adjust the breath if it is windy, uneven, or ordinary by focusing at the navel. Yeah. Place mindfulness on your meditation object. If it is other than the breath, which, you know, if you want to do a few minutes of watching the breath to settle the mind at the beginning of the session, that's fine. But mostly with either visualization practice or Lam Rim, then we would shift to your main meditation object. Okay, then five, balance the mind by reining in distracted thoughts. And then looking out for lethargy, restlessness, agitation, and laxity, and apply the appropriate antidotes should they occur. And six, at the conclusion of the session, dedicate the merit and arise from meditation gently. Okay. So now we're at another section called Cultivating Serenity and Insight in Seating Meditation. So even though this chapter is supposedly about serenity, they bring in insight too, which is quite interesting. So in the actual practice, serenity and insight are used as antidotes to the roughness and disorder of a beginner's mind. They're a way to counter the faults of lethargy and agitation as a means to deal with subtle states of mind in meditative absorption, and as the method to perfectly balance meditative absorption and wisdom. So this is talking about the benefits of serenity and insight, quite a few. Starting out, you know, they're antidotes to roughness and disorder of a beginner's mind. Yeah. And then we use them to counter faults of lethargy and agitation, yeah, which will help the mind to concentrate. We use serenity and insight as a means to deal with subtle states of mind in meditative absorption, and as a method to perfectly balance meditative absorption and wisdom. In other words, to be able to combine serenity and insight. Okay. Even if meditators avoid the trap of dead tree samadhi, yeah. So dead tree samadhi. We have some dead trees around here, don't we? Yeah, some of them have fallen down. Okay, so think when you see a dead tree. I want to avoid dead tree samadhi. What does it mean? What is dead tree samadhi? Becoming attached to the bliss of samadhi and failing to generate wisdom. So why is it called dead tree? Because you don't advance on the path to overcoming the afflictions once and for all. Yeah, you're stuck in the bliss. Yeah, you're kind of dead in the bliss. And you don't grow. It's like a dead tree doesn't grow. Yeah. Even if meditators avoid the trap of a dead tree samadhi, becoming attached to the bliss of samadhi and failing to generate wisdom, they may still not have the correct balance of concentration and wisdom. If they lack the wisdom based on insight, their meditative absorption will be characterized by ignorance. Okay. So here, you know, insight, best insight is that into emptiness. But, you know, that might be a bit difficult to start every meditation session with. Maybe, you know, just some awareness of impermanence. Yeah, how things are changing all the time. That might lower the ignorance, yeah. So even if their concentration is strong, they will be unable to cut the fetters that bind them to samsara. That's if their meditation is cut supported by ignorance. So the remedy is to emphasize the cultivation of wisdom and then combine it with serenity. Other people have sharp wisdom of the ultimate nature, but their concentration is weak and their meditation is hampered by distraction or laxity. Okay, so the first group in the previous paragraph, those people have serenity, but not much wisdom. Now here's some people who have some wisdom, some understanding, but they can't concentrate very well. Yeah, so like they're like a candle flame in the wind. Their concentration cannot illuminate objects clearly, and they are unable to cease the cycle of birth and death. So right there, it's showing us why we need both serenity and insight. Yeah. These people must emphasize serenity and then unify it with insight so that their concentration becomes like a candle burning in a closed area that clearly illuminates all that is there. Yeah, not like your blinking computer-like light in the dark, okay? Different kind of light. Many people combine the Amitabha practice with Chan meditation. This is quite popular in Chinese Buddhism nowadays. Many temples combine both of them. Yeah. They concentrate their minds on the recitation of the Amitabha Buddha's name. When their concentration is firm, they, quote, quote, turn back the light and observe the mind that is meditating, asking, who is reciting the Buddha's name? Sound familiar from our Dharma Drum friends? Yeah. So this Wato, a short phrase or question used as the subject of meditation to focus the mind, becomes all-consuming in the sense that the mind is completely drawn into this investigation. So you can't make your mind all-consuming. Yeah, I remember, you know, years ago when I first read something about the Wato or koan, and you become all consumed by it. I thought, well, you know, you must just sit down and like, I'm going to think about this all the time. I think about it all the time. But you can't force yourself. That's not going to get you anywhere, you know. Like, I should do this. I got to focus on it all the time. Because you're not really interested in it. So the idea is to become interested in the object, then you can focus on it. Yeah. So in, you know, Chinese Buddhism, you may use the Wato to do this. You know, if you're, let's say, meditating on the image of the Buddha or White Tara or whoever you're meditating on, yeah, then you have to be really interested in that image. And I think that's one thing I know for me that makes the breathing meditation doesn't catch my interest in the same way. If I really try, I can be more interested in it. But, you know, visualizing a deity, and then to me that's more interesting. Not that I get it very clear, but it makes me think about the qualities, yeah, and kind of who they are, what the different symbolism is. You know, that makes the mind more interested, and then the interest helps you to concentrate. So when they concentrate their minds on the recitation of Amitabha Buddha's name, when their concentration is firm, they turn back the light and observe the mind that is meditating, asking, who is reciting the Buddha's name? This is very interesting. Yeah. You've just been reciting Namo Amitabha, Namo Amitabha, Namo. Who in the world is doing that? Yeah. It's like when you get angry, you know, or you get attached, you know. Who is attached? Who's that person? Yeah. Who's angry? So this Wato, a short phrase or question used as the subject of meditation to focus the mind, becomes all-consuming in the sense that the mind is completely drawn into this investigation. As the intellect is confounded by this question, great doubt arises until suddenly there's a breakthrough and emptiness is realized. When done on the basis of firm serenity, the meditation on this Wato is insight meditation. It must then be conjoined with serenity. It is like picking up a pearl at the bottom of a pond. Finding it when there are waves or ripples is difficult. The water must be still and clear, and then the mind pearl appears by itself. Yeah, so when this, how important serenity, concentration are, you know, to make the mind quiet so you can actually see the object you're meditating on. Yeah, not see it with your eyes, but, you know, see it with your wisdom. Okay. Now, what I find interesting, as the intellect is confounded by this question, great doubt arises. Tibetan Buddhism, we've got answers. Yeah. If you get confounded, there's syllogisms. And you make a syllogism and you start investigating what you're thinking. Yeah. And eventually, through, I think, using the syllogism, then, something kind of cracks through the ignorance, And then there's this feeling about emptiness, and then your mind goes, but who am I now? And then you have to establish conventional existence. Yeah. Or you stay grasping your dhonka for, a few eons. Yeah, they say that, when you hear the story of a monk meditating on emptiness, and at one point he just held on to his dhonka here, kind of saying, what happened? Where am I? Who am I? Yeah, got scary. So, I'm here. I'm wearing a dhonka. I must exist. No, that's not the reason we exist. Okay, next section is cultivating serenity and insight while interacting with the environment. Okay, so Zhi Yi eloquently explains how to practice serenity and insight while engaged in various activities. Regarding walking, here's what he says, okay? At times when you are involved in walking, bring forth this thought, for what purpose do I now wish to walk? You're walking. Why am I walking? Okay. If it is on account of being directed by afflictions, it's like, I'm tired of sitting at the computer. I want to get up and jog. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. I want to see the flowers. Good luck. Okay. So if it is on account of being directed by the afflictions or by a non-virtuous or neutral matters, you should not proceed with walking. Why am I getting up to walk? Because this person was just driving me crazy, and now I know what I want to say to them. So I'm going to go find them and say it. Yeah. Yeah, you ever walk with that motivation?
Yeah. Build up the case while you're going around the Buddha.
Exactly. You build up your case while you're circumambulating the Buddha. And, and then you know exactly what you want to say to that person, how they, were projecting on you and, Okay, you should not proceed with walking. If it is not an instance of being directed by afflictions, and if it is for the sake of a matter that produces virtuous benefits, and that is in accord with the Dharma, you should go ahead and proceed with walking. Okay. Class is going to start. I want to listen to the Dharma. Okay, that's your motivation. So you proceed with walking, you get here. Yeah. Or you're going to a session. So you proceed with walking. You have a virtuous motivation. When it's lunchtime, people arrive at lunch so early these days. Yeah, it's like each day it's earlier and earlier. Okay, so how do you go about cultivating serenity while walking? If you are walking, this is Zhi Yi speaking. If you are walking, maintain awareness that due to walking, there may come to exist all of the phenomena of the afflictions. of good, of bad, and so forth. Okay, so just due to walking, if you're not focused on something virtuous, yeah, you're walking, and oh, that beeping. Is that the fire thing? Is that the septic system? Why am I hearing this beeping? Maybe it's the elevator. Okay, yeah. So there may come, when you're exhausting, when you're walking, there may come to exist all of the phenomena of the afflictions, of good, of bad, and so forth. If you are completely aware that the mind engaged in walking, as well as all phenomena present in walking, cannot be found. Okay, getting you into emptiness meditation. All the phenomena, you know, involved in walking, the mind, the floor, yeah, the muscles, okay, that all these things present in walking cannot be found, then the false thinking mind will cease. Your ignorance, you know, thinking that there's, I am walking. I made the decision to walk. I am in control, and I am walking. Yeah? Strong eye grasping. False thinking mind. It is this that constitutes the cultivation of serenity while walking. When you, you know, ask yourself, why am I walking? Yeah. Lama Zopa has a way of doing walking meditation where you ask yourself, who is walking? Not why am I walking, but who is walking? Yeah. And both of them have the same function, you know, leading you to investigate who's walking, or, you know, why am I walking? And what's around me when I'm walking? And how did I even make a decision to walk? That's an interesting one. Yeah. How did I make the decision to walk? Am I even aware of having made that decision? Did I have to think about it and look at the clock and think of how many minutes it's going to take me to walk where I want to go and see what else I can squeeze into the extra 30 seconds? Yeah. Yeah. Why am I walking? Who made the decision? Who had the thought to walk? Am I walking slow? Am I walking fast? Did you make that decision and then you just keep walking the way that you decided? Or do you have to continually make that decision so that your walking remains at a steady pace? So how often do you have to make the decision to walk or to keep on walking? Yeah, or to walk a little bit faster or a little bit slower. Yeah. Who's making that decision? Okay. Yeah. If it is not an instance of being directed by afflictions, and if it is for the sake of a matter that produces virtuous benefits and that is in accord with the Dharma, you should go ahead and proceed with walking. How do you go about, this is Venerable Shiyi, how do you go about cultivating serenity while walking? If you are walking, maintain awareness that due to walking, there may come to exist all of the phenomena of the afflictions, okay, of good, of bad, and so forth. Yeah, if you are completely aware that the mind engaged in walking, as well as all phenomena present in walking, cannot be found, the false thinking mind will cease. It is this that constitutes the cultivation of serenity while walking. Yeah, because when the ignorant mind is thinking, then you're not going to be focused. You're not going to really have serenity, let alone having insight. How do you go about cultivating insight contemplation while walking? Bring forth this thought. It is due to the mind that I move the body. As a result, I bring about that forward movement referred to as walking. It is due to walking that there may come to exist all of the phenomena of the afflictions of good, of bad, and so forth. So that's what you think and what you're aware of. Okay. It is due to the mind that I move the body. You can also pause here and what mind? Yeah. Do you remember making that decision? As a result, I bring about that forward movement referred to as walking. So walking is something that is referred to, something that is merely designated. Okay. You could also get into a whole thing of why do I call it walking? Yeah. It is due to walking that there may then come to exist all the phenomena of the afflictions, of good, of bad, and so forth. So if we aren't paying attention, I'm walking, but my leg hurts. I'm walking, but it's too cold out. I'm walking to lunch. Oh, that's good. What am I going to eat? You know, and your mind starts going all over. It's quite interesting. The same thing happens, I think, when people are driving. Yeah, you get in the car, you arrive somewhere, and if somebody says, what were you thinking about as you drove? Blank. Yeah. You had that happen? What am I thinking about? Do you even try when you're driving to be aware of your thoughts? Yeah. And keep them focused on the road, you know. Or if you're listening to something, yeah, this is the thing with, you know, people are now listening to podcasts where they're driving. Yeah, if you start listening intently to a podcast, you're not going to be paying attention to the road quite as much. Yeah, so to really watch that. Mm-hmm. Or you get lost in your thoughts. Yeah, oh, I'm going to the store to get bread. Well, let's see, what kind of bread do I want? I can get this, I can get that, I can get it. Go to a bakery, I can go to the bakery section at the grocery store, and your mind is off and running. Yeah, right? Try and keep it on a Dharma thing. Then immediately, she says, turn back the attention and contemplate the mind that is engaged in walking. You will fail to perceive any characteristic appearance associated with it. Realize that the one who walks, as well as all the phenomena involved in walking, the ground, the muscles, the breath, everything else, all the phenomena involved in walking are both ultimately empty and still. Still. You don't have to make a fuss about them. They aren't inherently existent. It is this which constitutes cultivation of insight contemplation while walking. So you can do the same with cooking. Or washing dishes. Who is washing the dishes? I am. Why isn't so-and-so doing this? Yeah, okay. Yeah, when your mind goes, I am. Okay, who's the I who's walking the dish? Is the hand washing the dish? Is the mind washing the dish? Is my foot washing the dish? Yeah. What is a dish? I say I'm washing a ditch. Washing a dish. Yeah. What is a dish? Yeah. And is this thing a dish or is it a platter? Or is it a bowl? Yeah. What kind of dish is it? A broken one. Okay. So these instructions are clear. This is back to His Holiness. The instructions are clear. First, examine your motivation for walking. And if it is conjoined with afflictions or even a neutral intention, do not proceed, but stop and assess what, once again, what is best to do at that moment. I'm late. Run. Okay. Why am I late? It's a whole other topic. Okay. The instructions, to cultivate serenity while walking, maintain your introspective awareness so that afflictions do not arise. Furthermore, reflect on the mind engaged in walking, as well as everything else involved in walking. Our legs, feet, and shoes, the road, the bumps in the road, the parking, what do you call it? What, the thing you tripped over? The what? The
concrete.
Yeah, just a thing of concrete so the cars have a, yeah, there's a special, what? Well, that bump in the thing, yeah. What you, and there's some word for it, yeah. It'll come up in your meditation. Okay, so yeah, you pay attention: your legs, your feet, your shoes, the road, its bumps and turns, and anything in the road, and any bugs on the road. Yeah, our destination, pay attention to that, and others on the road, and so forth. And see that none of them can be found in their parts. Yeah, doing emptiness meditation, seeing if something is its parts. Yeah, is it in its parts? Seeing this, the mind that mistakenly grasps these things as real will cease. So it's a nice meditation to do. To practice insight while walking, analyze what the word walking refers to. See that there is no independent action of walking. Yeah. There's a lot of different actions of walking. Can you point to one of them that is the action of walking? Yeah, because you say, I'm walking, like walking is one solid thing. Okay. Well, fast walking, slow walking, yeah, stumbling, shuffling. Yeah, running, many ways to walk. Yeah. So if there's many ways to walk, there's no independent action of walking that you could find in all the moments of walking or any of the moments of walking. Okay, so see that there is no independent action of walking. There is no independent I or mind that instructs the body to move. Wait a minute. I'm controlling this body. I told my body to move. Check that eye out. Okay. Walking exists by being merely designated in dependence on the legs moving the body forward. What is the mind that has the intention to walk? Does it have color, shape, location? Does it exist in the past, present, or future? Yeah, there's the mind. I decided to walk. So that mind was in the past. How long ago? Oh, just one moment. But then already one moment has changed into 2 moments, into 5 moments, and so on. Yeah. When was that decision? Am I deciding also in this present moment to walk? Yeah. Do you start walking the moment you have made the decision to walk? Or you decide to walk, and then you sit there and go, should I walk or shouldn't I walk? Yeah. You made the decision, then maybe 10 minutes goes by. Yeah. Because you start looking at the spider on the wall, and then you start thinking, I got to catch the spider, you know. He's usually hiding. Now I can see him, but I have to go somewhere quickly, but catching the spider is important, so I got to find a chair to stand on and get my little bug collector, which doesn't work, and so, you know, I have a little, from eating applesauce and a piece of paper, yeah, I use that, because my bug collector doesn't work, you know. I was like, how am I going to get that? The bug is too high. I look out the door. Anybody taller than me coming? If somebody taller than me is coming, it's like, can you come help me? Yeah? Okay. So walking exists by being merely designated in dependence on the legs moving forward. Moving the body forward. What is the mind that has the intention to walk? Does it have color, shape, or location? Does it exist in the past, present, or future? Is it unitary, or does it have different aspects? Yeah. Does your intention have different aspects? Is the intention different from the mind that is having the intention to walk? Okay. Is it caused? Is that mind with the intention to walk, is it caused or uncaused? By employing ultimate analysis, understand that all phenomena involved in walking are empty of existing from their own side. Because their ultimate nature is beyond the afflictive conditioning of the world, they are said to be still. So when they say still, it means beyond the afflictive conditioning of the world. You have perceived emptiness in some way or another. Zhi Yi continues by describing serenity and insight in relation to standing, sitting, lying down, doing various physical activities, and speaking in a similar way. He discusses how to practice serenity and insight when the 6 sense faculties are cognizing the 6 sense objects. Okay, as for the ear and sounds, because, you know, now you can also shift it to focus on one of your senses, and watch how it is perceiving things and analyze it. So here he's going to do it with hearing. So this is Shi again. Regarding the cultivation of serenity, when the ear hears sounds, whichever sounds are heard by the ear, immediately realize that they are characterized by being like echoes. They don't sound like echoes. How are they like echoes? Yeah. First, you need to think about that. What does it mean to say sounds are like echoes? They don't sound like echoes. Yeah. When you hear an echo, it sounds like if you hear an echo of somebody's voice, it sounds like their voice. Is it their voice? No. It's an echo of the voice. Yeah. When you play a tape, when you turn on the computer and you're listening to something or watching something, yeah. Yeah, where that sound that's coming. Well, yeah, when you watch movies, yeah, and the characters in the movies are speaking, are you thinking their voices are like echoes, their words are just like echoes, that they sound like real people who are talking, but they're just, you know, sounds coming out of the computer or out of the cinema building. Yeah. No, we get all involved like these are real people. And we start having emotions. You know, look how this person treated that person. And, you know, now they're getting along. Oh, now they're fighting again. Now, you know, this, now that. We're so involved like it's real people. But actually, the people we're seeing on the screen and the sounds we're hearing, they aren't real people. Yeah, in the same way that an echo is not a real voice of somebody. Yeah, and echoes are an analogy talking about emptiness, because when you are analyzing something using ultimate analysis, you know, you can't find it, but, you know that there's some conventional thing there, but whatever is there doesn't exist like you think it's a real voice, but if you just realized emptiness, yeah, it's like, oh, no, this is not a real voice. Yeah, it appears to be something real. You know, the sound appears to be real sound. The words appear to have real meaning. Yeah. Actually, this is all dependent on our mind putting these things together and thinking of the meaning of the sound, or even thinking that's a sound, and recognizing the words and knowing what they mean, and you put together a meaning. Yeah. It's not that there's a real person in the TV talking to you. But we respond to the person in the TV as if it's a real person. Yeah. Okay. So regarding the cultivation of serenity when the ear hears sounds, whichever sounds are heard by the ear, immediately realize that they are characterized by being like echoes. If you hear sounds with which you are temperamentally agreeable, do not give rise to attachment. You hear the voice of somebody you like, speaking very gently, saying what you like. You hear music that you like. Yeah. Do not give rise to attachment. As for sounds to which you are temperamentally opposed, do not give rise to hate. It's like, I can't stand that music, or something's too loud, or whatever it is. Okay? Because we're always just, there's a sense object, there's a feeling, then we respond to that feeling, yeah? And of course, with lots of namtok. Conceptualization. As for sounds to which you are neither opposed nor agreeable, do not give rise to a discriminating mind. You know, an ignorant mind that's like imputing some reason, you know, or something on that sound. I wonder what that is. I wonder where it's coming from. Yeah. It is this which constitutes the cultivation of serenity while hearing. Okay, now he continues. What is meant by the cultivation of insight contemplation in the hearing of sounds? Bring forth this thought. No matter what sound is heard, it is empty and utterly devoid of any inherent existence. It is only from the coming together of the sense faculty and the sense object that there is a generation of the auditory consciousness. Next, the mental consciousness arises and in a forced manner gives rise to discrimination. It is because of this that there may then come to exist all the phenomena of the afflictions of good, of bad, and so forth. Okay, so when you're thinking about this, you know, the hearing, the mind, doing the mindfulness and hearing like this, yeah, and the you hear some sound, then where is the sound? Yeah. Oh, it's coming from over there. Maitri, the cat, is scratching on the scratch board. Okay. Oh, the sound is over there. If the sound is over there, how can I hear it? Because for me to hear that sound, you know, there's what, the anvil and stirrup in the middle of my, you know, here inside somewhere, and there has to be this vibration, there has to be sound waves coming and hitting it, and that has to, you know, wiggle, and then that touches the auditory nerve, which goes, you know, into the brain, and the brain kind of, you know, then your conceptual mind is going to start, yeah, and it's like, oh, yeah, unpleasant sound, pleasant sound, whatever is going on. But where is the sound? Yeah. So, you know, like when we hit the gong, yeah? Does the sound start over there, and what you're hearing is the sound as it moves? Is it still? Because when it hits your ear, you hear it. Before it, the waves hit your ear, you don't hear it. When it hits your ear, you say the sound is over there, because the gong is over there. And where did the song originate from? Yeah, was the sound, you know, was it inside the gong? The sound inside the gong, and this brought it out? Or was the sound inside your striker and the gong brought it out? Yeah. Which thing made the sound? Which is the cause of the sound? Yeah, this or that? Yeah. Well, both are. But wait a minute, that sound went on for a while. Yeah? And I just struck it once, and it continues for a while, and it's over there. And who's striking the gong? Yeah. It's very interesting, you know. Yeah, where is the sound? Like you're hearing me talk, is the sound in here coming out fully formed? Yeah. If the sound depends, it depends on many things, you know, a tongue and a mouth and teeth and air and your esophagus and your lungs and things. Well, where is that sound coming from? Does it come from your lungs? Does it come from your vocal cords? Which vocal cord? How many vocal cords do we have?
Six?
Maybe.
That's my guess.
Yeah. Huh? What?
That's a guess.
Okay. I'm sure we could look it up. Okay. So then he continues. Then turn back the attention and contemplate the mind that hears sounds. You will not perceive any characteristic appearance. Yeah, realize that the one who hears, as well as all of the other associated phenomena, are ultimately empty and still. It is this which constitutes the insight contemplation in relation to the ear and sounds. So you hear the gong, and then the sound gets quieter. Yeah. Is there another cause that makes the sound get quieter? Yeah. Where is the sound going as it gets quieter? Does it go somewhere? If it doesn't go anywhere, then how did it get from the gong to your ear? Anyway, you know, you start to really think about dependent arising here, and that in all these different parts that and things that are necessary to hear a sound, you can't find anything that is real in the sense of having its own nature, independent nature. Okay. So we'll stop here for the time being. We only have a few more pages to this chapter, and then we go into higher training of wisdom.